and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer, Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the release of the newest line of Kingston Landmark holiday ornaments, a local tradition entering its 31st year.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
The holiday season is starting to take shape downtown, and with it comes one of the Downtown Kingston BIA's annual traditions, a new pewter ornament collection. Now in its 31st year, the series continues to document some of the city's most iconic buildings and landmarks. This year's lineup includes three new buildings, a well-loved park, and a piece marking a major local college anniversary. I spoke with Jan McDonald, Downtown Kingston's Director of Events, about this year's collection. So the collection has been part of our holiday season for over 30 years now. I was wondering if you could tell us a bit about the tradition and what you think makes it such a hit every year.
I know, it's kind of crazy that every year we still find buildings and these sort of cultural sort of assets in the city to make into pewter ornaments. You'd think after this is our 31st year that we would sort of run out of buildings, but no, Kingston is so historically rich that, you know, it seems like we have an endless pool to choose from. So so we've been doing this for 31 years, five ornaments every year. We get suggestions. We have so many customers who have every single collection from year one. They get super excited whenever we would do the new release. But we get suggestions, all the time, a lot of suggestions from Kingstonians, which is great. It's always a fun thing to do. I think it's really nice for locals, but then, you know, we have a lot of collections that are like Queen's buildings or, you know, nice sort of commemorative things that you can give as gifts, which is really great. So if you have, you know, kids attending Queen's, it's a nice little Christmas gift. We do things like, you know, tragically hip collections. So if you have like hip fans in your family, I think they give really well as gifts. And then it's just sort of a nice thing to sort of recognize those places in the city that have, you know, special meaning for you.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, this lineup includes a lot of iconic places in Kingston. I was wondering if you could walk us through the 2025 releases and maybe a bit about how some of them were chosen.
So this year's lineup is really wonderful. So we start out next week with the Bages Brewery, which is a beautiful building that has since been turned into condos. But it is on Wellington Street. Following that, we have Louise House. So Louise House is on Johnson Street, and it's sort of an architectural treasure. It began as a new schoolhouse for the Kingston Board of Trustees. Just a really, really beautiful building. Queen students would especially recognize this building because it is now the Starbucks on the corner of Johnson and Division. So that's the building we're talking about there. The Broom Factory is week three. So one of the main, I would say, live music venues in the city used to be a Broom Factory. And now, like I said, it operates as a live music venue. It also houses like the Kingston Canadian Film Festival, Prue, so lots of sort of creative brains in that building. Fourth week is McBurney Park, or more commonly known as Skeleton Park. So Skeleton Park is you know, definitely one of the most popular sort of gathering spaces for young families in the downtown core. They do a wonderful festival every year, Skeleton Park Arts Fest. And it has like a pretty fun history. It was established in 1800s as Kingston's upper burial ground, which is sort of why it got the sort of Skeleton Park name, but very, very cool. And then finally, week five, it's sort of the ornament itself has a number of different sort of iconic emblems of the Royal Military College of Canada. So it's RC, the RMC ornament, which again, we've done a lot with Queens. We have in the past sort of touched on some of the RMC monuments, but this is sort of an all-encompassing like RMC ornament because their 150th anniversary is coming up. So that's this year's lineup.
Awesome. And I'm sure a lot of these were community suggestions, but I was wondering if any of these were like people have been asking for them like crazy and you guys were like, we have to do it this year.
Definitely. Skeleton Park, we get a lot. That one's a little bit tricky. Buildings are a little bit more simple in terms of rendering into an ornament. Skeleton Park is a very cool one because we sort of used an aerial shot to sort of fashion the ornament. But the Skeleton Park community, sort of that community, it's a very close-knit community. And so, yeah, we get a lot of suggestions for that one. And then I'm not sure how the other ones came in. I think we always look for buildings that have some kind of historical significance so that we can tell the story of the building. I do think it was someone from Queens who talked about the Starbucks building, though, because, yeah, we know it as the Starbucks, but it's kind of cool that that it started as a schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm. You're also including past ornaments this year, which is a new kind of thing. I was wondering if you could talk a bit about that. Yeah. What made you guys this year decide to offer that?
Yeah. So on our website, which is downtownkingston.ca, we still have ornaments available from past collections. So we definitely, you know, popular ones go pretty quick. And so, you know, they tend to sell out pretty fast. But it's kind of surprising going back 31 years what we still have in our catalog here. And so you can go on the website and take a look through the years. Maybe you're trying to fill in some gaps in your own collection or just kind of see what we've done historically. But those are available to purchase. They're around $8 each. And then we've put together little themed collections this year. So we have one that's a Tragically Hip themed collection. So in there, it would be the Gord Downie Pier, the hip sign at Slush Puppy Place, things like that. We've also done one which is sort of those classic Kingston sort of buildings. When you know, you come to Kingston, you have to see City Hall, you have to see Kingston Penn, that sort of thing. So really fun, cute little themed collections that are also available on the website.
You also have that connection where folks bring their downtown shopping receipts. I was wondering if you could just talk about that connection to supporting local business as well.
Yeah. So the whole program started, like you said, we are a BIA, and so it's really important that we support our member businesses and try to drive business and keep downtown as lively and vibrant as we can. And so in order to purchase the new collection, so the old collections are available on our website, as I mentioned. The new collection, you have to present $25 worth of receipts from downtown. So it could be a cafe. Could be a retail shop. It could be your dentist. It could be food basics like the grocery store. So any downtown business, you present $25 worth of receipts and the ornament is $10. So, and the ornaments are available in three locations starting on Monday. So they're available at the Grand Theater box office. They're available at the Slush Puppy Place box office and the Visitor Information Center, which is across from City Hall. So you go in with your $25 worth of receipts and the ornaments are available to you at $10.
You've been listening to Jan McDonald with the Downtown Kingston BIA on this year's new pewter ornament collection. For more details on the designs and the release schedule, more information is available at downtownkingston.ca. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about the teardown of Gananoque's train bridge.
Thank you, Jesse. Mayor John Beddoes says newly confirmed structural data from the demolition of the King Street train bridge in Gananoque shows the town's long-closed crossing had deteriorated beyond repair and stands as a cautionary example of what happens when municipal assets go without maintenance. The demolition, approved in a 4-3 council vote earlier this year, is being carried out under a contract worth $488,900. According to Beddoes, conditions uncovered during the teardown affirm that both the overland and overwater sections of the structure were unsound, with years of moisture trapped beneath a wooden boardwalk accelerating decay. Beddoes pointed to Ontario Structure Inspection Manual inspection reports dating back to 2010, which repeatedly recommended maintenance and called for more detailed assessments. He said no significant work was done between the town assuming ownership of the bridge in 1997 and its closure in 2022, and suggested the asset could likely have been preserved had maintenance funding been prioritized. The bridge removal has been one of the town's most contentious issues this year. In June, Gananoque's Integrity Commissioner advised that Beddoes could not use Ontario Strong Mayor veto to overturn council's decision, ruling that his reasoning tied to potential future infrastructure funding fell outside the scope of the legislation. Council ultimately supported removal, with Deputy Mayor Vicky Leakey and Councillors Matt Harper, Patrick Kirkby and David Osmond voting in favour, and Beddoes and Councillors Anne-Marie Coyner and Colin Brown opposed. The demolition comes amid ongoing community pushback, including an online petition led by the Save Our Train Bridge group. Beddoes said the town must now use the experience to guide future infrastructure planning and ensure its asset management plan is properly funded. Thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGR reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about Queen's University's response to a hateful video filmed in the university district.
Thank you, Dinah. Queen's University has released a statement condemning a video that is circulated on social media, which includes transphobic and anti-Semitic content, and was recorded during parties held off-campus in the university district on homecoming. The university says that the video has been, quote, erroneously attributed to Queen's students, and that once identified, action was immediately taken by the school to have the video removed, which it has since been. Queen's condemned the video and said the people involved with the video primarily are not affiliated with Queen's University. The university reiterated its support for the transgender community in its statement, highlighting the, quote, acute harm given the timing of the video, surfacing during Transgender Awareness Week. Queen's University's statement, shared last Thursday morning, came a day after PSAC 901, the union representing grad student workers at Queen's, released its own statement on the video, calling for the university to act concretely. PSAC 901 said the harmful content fits into a pattern at the university, referencing controversies involving marginalized communities at Queen's in semi-recent history, including a racist image circulated of an AMS executive candidate, racist and homophobic notes left in Chown Hall in 2019, and more recently, the controversy stirred up when a professor repeatedly used the N-word in class while reciting lyrics during a 2024 Law 320 evidence class. Quote, "We condemn this behavior unequivocally," the statement from the union read. The statement made a connection between the racist and transphobic video and the aforementioned Law 320 video, and noted that these incidents highlighted, quote, "a persistent cultural problem at Queen's, where bigotry continues to emerge and institutional responses remain inconsistent or insufficient." The union added that their health and safety officer has requested an opportunity to engage with the university to discuss concrete steps and how it plans to address the, quote, "recurring harms faced by equity-seeking groups."
Thank you, Jesse. Now over to the LJI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio with a story about local reactions to a residential tax rate increase in Loyalist Township.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
Loyalist Township's latest draft budget for 2026 shows a residential rate increase of 4.93%. The township held its first of three budget meetings as they prepare for their 2026 budget. The draft 2026 operating budget results in a township levy requirement of almost $24.6 million. This is a 6.4% increase from 2025. According to staff's report, the township experienced development in 2025, resulting in assessment growth totaling $300,000. This growth helped reduce the tax rate by 1.3% down to the currently proposed 4.93% increase. The township's director of finance and treasurer, David Clazy, explains the increase and notes numbers they'll be gathering going forward.
When it comes to tax rates, I just want to be clear that when we're talking about a 4.93% tax increase, we're only talking about the township portion of a tax bill. And of course, there are three components to a tax bill, that being one of the components. We then have the Lennox and Addington County tax rates, which is also makes up part of the bill. And we don't have those rates yet. They're generally set early in the spring. So once we have those, that will be the next component. And then we have the education rates that are set by the province. So at this point, they haven't been set yet, but they haven't changed in the last two or three years, mainly because there hasn't been a reassessment. So we're assuming they will probably not change, but we don't have that confirmation as of yet. So the conversations over the next couple of days are just about the township portion of that bill. And then once we have those other rates confirmed in the future, then that'll make up the total of the remainder of the bill.
Members of the committee voiced their concerns about the increase and noted they'd like to see it under 4%. Councillor Lorna Willis shared her thoughts.
I appreciate the work the staff have done, and I can tell that a lot of pencil sharpening was done before this budget was brought to us. I still do choke a bit at 4.93% in a year when people are very much struggling just to buy groceries and things like that. Though I understand, too, that we have to continue to offer services and follow through on all of the master plans that we've done and things like that.
Councillor Mike Buderick spoke about the rate increase and suggested more discussion along with more public engagement.
Under four would be ideal. I think we could, as council, could take some time to maybe throw some email suggestions back, too, as we let this sink in. Maybe think to community itself on what they're actually looking for and see where we might be able to cut.
Councillor Carol Park spoke about keeping it under 4% as well.
I agree with my colleagues. I think coming under 4% is where we need to be.
Councillor Paul Broderick noted the difficulty in prioritizing items on the budget.
Maybe look at some of the low priority items that could be eliminated, because obviously if we have a scale and so on, there's going to be some that, and I think the problem probably with the low priority items are going to be small dollar values, but maybe if they could go back and look at maybe that and maybe a one or two of sort of the medium proposals, just to get an idea if we can get down to that magic number that some of us are talking about, under four.
Mayor Jim Hagedorn noted the hard work staff did putting the budget together.
After talking to staff, we realized quickly that this is a hard budget to bring forward. There have been a lot of increases in costs, and trying to keep the increase tax rate at a reasonable rate did take a lot of work. But the work was done. Staff worked very hard to identify areas to be able to trim and be able to bring forward the budget that they did.
Hagedorn noted the impact of the township's newly appointed Strong Mayor Powers.
Strong Mayor Powers were given to Loyalist Township this year. And as a result, I did work with staff more than what I normally would have during the development of this budget. We mostly to discuss, and also I did provide some direction and suggestions where applicable, trying to make it as streamlined as possible. And with the Strong Mayor Powers, one of the things that we wanted to do was keep it as traditional as possible while still meeting all of the requirements of the legislation. I believe we've done that, following the typical process the best we can. Some of the terminology will be a little different with amendments and things like that. But I really hope that we are able to have good discussions and amendments if needed.
Clazy explained removing capital projects won't affect the tax rate.
If there was any of those projects that were the council wanted to remove, then that funding would stay in the capital reserve and be there for future years. So I just wanted to make that clarification, as there's been a couple comments about looking at capital projects, which we can do, but I just want to be clear that that wouldn't necessarily have a direct impact on the 4.93%.
Clazy speaks about funding for the W.J. Henderson Recreation Center.
We have an additional $674,000 built in for staffing and programming at the Henderson Community Center. And again, that's based on the expansion that's gone on there, with the arena now being operational full time. And it also looks at staffing for the pool coming on midway through 2026. So while that's a big number in staffing, it's also important to note that we do have a fair amount of additional revenue coming in terms of user fees and rental fees to offset that. So it's not the full hit, but there is some definitely investment in that.
The draft budget also showed an increase of $40,000 to the township's Family Physician Recruitment Incentive Program to accommodate the signing of two additional physicians. Deputy Mayor Nathan Townend explains staff's next steps going forward.
There's a number of things staff want to do in the background to present to council committee at our next meeting. But what would be helpful for staff right now is any general thoughts, directions from committee of things that people want to see, information people would like to see in more detail, things that committee would like staff to bring back. So general thoughts and perceptions so that staff can gear their work for our next meeting.
Staff will return to council with updates at their next budget meeting scheduled for November 26th. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about surging food bank usage in Northumberland County.
Northumberland County Food Banks is searching for a new location and better vehicle to increase services in Port Hope. Currently, the food share operates out of the United Church on South Street, but having limited hours restricts how it serves clients. Megan Flindle, executive director, presented to Port Hope Council Tuesday night, anticipating record usage this year. Statistics she provided suggest more than 10,000 visits in Port Hope, an increase of 24% in 2025.
Our numbers have drastically increased, actually doubling since pre-pandemic levels. One additional thing that should be noted is that we see three times the amount of these numbers at our Coburg location, where we are able to operate our services with more frequency and variety of times. So that we don't feel that we truly have a full representation for you this evening of food insecure population in Port Hope due to those current limitations of being only open on a Wednesday morning and Wednesday evening.
The Coburg location is open Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday. Flindle stated the organization is looking for stable support from municipal council, possibly in the form of a monthly contribution and lease agreement for a renovated municipal space as well as a repurposed town vehicle. Councillor Les Andrews said there are a few locations which the food share could move to, that being the Lakelands Public Health Unit on Rose Glen Road. Flindle noted that both the Quinty and Whippy food banks lease municipal space for free. Approximately 36% of food bank usage in Port Hope is for children and youth under the age of 18, while 36 to 50-year-olds use the food bank 21% of the time. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, November 27th, 4 degrees is your high, but it's going to feel much colder, actually feeling closer to minus 4. 65% chance of precipitation, which means we are going to see periods of light snow throughout the day, dropping down to minus 2 overnight, which is going to feel closer to minus 6. Friday, November 28th, 1 is your daytime high with a little bit of sunshine in the forecast, but it's going to be very chilly, feeling closer to minus 7, so bundle up when you're out and about. Saturday, November 29th, high of 0. And it's not going to be as bone-chillingly cold, just a low of -2 that will feel like -2. Sunday, November 30th, daytime high of 3 degrees, mix of rain and snow in the forecast, dropping down to just below freezing overnight. And then the start of December, Monday, December 1st, daytime high of 5 degrees with a 63% chance of precipitation. This is Jesse Bell with your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Berry Street, King to Stewart is closed November 25th to 26th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. each day for the removal of a large tree. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Raglan Road, Division 2 Main, closed until November 30th from 7:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. each day for gas main installation. Toronto Street, Durham to Park, is closed until November 28th for installation of new water, sanitary, and storm services. And Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Catwoods Drive, Centennial to Gardner's, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury. Expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. And Victoria Street and Earl Street. Expect delays while a contractor mobilizes the site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. CFRC 101.9 FM, the Kingston Music Office, and our sponsors Long & McQuaid and Modern City Taxi are pleased to announce the 2025 Release Radar Listenership Survey is now open. Select your top 10 singles and top 10 albums and EPs released in Kingston this year by local artists, and enter for a chance to win $1,000 in prizes from CFRC and our friends at Long & McQuaid, KPP Concerts, Kingston Canadian Film Festival, The Screening Room, and Black Dog Hospitality. Show your love for local music. Get in on the action today via CFRC.ca, proudly supporting local artists since 1922. Welcome back to CFRC. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new track by Kingston-based songwriter Sarah O'Neill called This Mess, a song and video that were created by editing together discarded test footage from September 2024. The video explores the creator's connection to her ever-changing mind, body, and image. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream This Mess by Sarah O'Neill on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
I can't write, won't make anything good. I can't find a substitute. Living truth, my mind's not wide enough to guess the this mess, I guess it's mine. My mind's not wide enough, I guess this mess, I guess it's mine.
Revelation Radio. Explore the sound shaping subculture. Tune in to 101.9 CFRC Wednesdays from 11 to noon to uncover revelations mixed into music from across the alternative scene, underground, and across the globe.
The revolution will be live.
Revelation Radio, Wednesdays at 11.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Plugged in My Ears podcast. I'm Adam, joined by Sam and Kyle. Today is it's a nice Tuesday we're recording on, kind of rainy outside here in Kingston. But we're gonna heat things up with some talk about the FIFA World Cup. We're going to talk about some stuff going on in the NHL, and then close it off with a discussion about Milan Lucic, who everyone is thinking about today.
Well, before we get into it, speaking about heat, a few of you will notice this, but I'm actually recording this in a sauna known as my apartment. And so if I could give any advice to the sports community out there, either don't work hard enough so that you can't end up going to a place where you have to live in the closet of an apartment building, or work so hard so that you make the professional league at the highest level in the sport in which you compete so that you can afford a place that doesn't make you feel like you're living in a favela. Or, in other words, for those of you who still go to Queens, Chown Hall.
You know what, Sam? I actually learned about favelas today in my environmental science class that I'm taking. And they are pretty much exactly what Chown Hall was. I'm slowly realizing this.
Kyle and I were ahead of our times when we started naming it the Grand Favela of Rio.
Man, I don't know, Sam. What would you say is better, Chown Hall or your apartment building right now? If you had to choose one to live in, Chown?
No way. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Well,
I also was living with Queens golf prodigy Lucas Ezlik at the time.
Oh, that is
since retired. But no, I don't know. It all depends. I mean, look, anyway, so let's move on to sports. This is dull. What were we supposed to start with again?
We're starting with the FIFA World Cup draw. So it's coming up December 5th. This is a big one for Canada because, as we all know, Canada, Mexico, and the USA are all hosting the World Cup together. So Canada's having games in Toronto and games in Vancouver. Canada will play all of their games in Toronto. It's been confirmed. So sucks to all the BC Canadians that wanted to see Canada play, because you won't be. But Toronto fans, you will get to see Canada. And I just checked out tickets for like the first game, and they don't even know who's playing yet. And I think it's a non-Canada game. It was $800 for nosebleeds, which is outrageous. But also, it's the World Cup, and we don't know when they're going to come back to Canada. So an interesting situation for Canada, though, because they are in pot one as the hosts. So pot one is essentially mixed in with all of the top teams. So the other teams joining them in pot one that they won't have to worry about in the group stage are Mexico, USA, then Spain, Argentina, France, England, Brazil, Portugal, the Netherlands, Belgium, and Germany. So that wipes off a decent chunk of the teams that Canada won't have to worry about until the knockout stage, if they get to the knockout stage. Pot two is a little more interesting. You've got kind of powerhouses like Croatia, who went to the World Cup final just a couple World Cups ago. You have Morocco, Colombia, who Canada just played, and they drew 0-0 against Colombia. Again, another powerhouse in Uruguay. Switzerland, Japan, Senegal, Iran, Korea Republic, Ecuador, Austria, and Australia. So group pot two is definitely a little more challenging, but Canada right now is ranked 28th in the world, and all these teams are kind of around that same benchmark. So essentially they'd be getting a team that is kind of similar to their skill level. Sam, Kyle, any of those teams sound like a team you don't want to play, or it sound like a team that would be good for Canada?
I want to play the U.S. They're actually historically not very good at soccer, so
yeah, I know. We beat them in the Four Nations. I think we can beat them in soccer too.
We beat them in soccer this past year in the what was it, the I don't know what tournament, but we won against them.
Yeah, in the CONCACAF the North American tournament, they did beat the U.S. The U.S. would definitely be a nice matchup. That would be a sick matchup in the knockout stage. I feel like the U.S. are definitely, maybe, I don't know, I think they've improved, actually. I don't want to say definitely, but I think they've improved since the last time that they played in that tournament. But, I mean, I think Canada's the powerhouse of the hosts right now, actually. Mexico and the U.S., I don't know. I don't know if they can keep up. Sam, you're looking at me funny?
Well, no, I'm not looking at you funny. I'm looking at Mexico and the United States funny. Canada, in my view, it probably is better than those two countries right now, but they really shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I mean, right, we play in big igloos that we call domes, and those guys have summer 24/7 all year round. But, I don't really know how Canada's better. I think it's kind of just a function of time. But statistically, I do think the United States is better, contrary to what Kyle said. Like, at the present moment, maybe Canada is better than the United States, and I think many people would say it is, but... Mm-hmm. Globally, the United States is better than Canada is at soccer and has been for a long time. Yeah. But in terms of who we want to get a matchup with in pod two, I can tell you we definitely don't want to play against Uruguay. I mean, the ear biter and face licker is gone in Suarez. But still, like, one has to be cautious because those guys are part Argentinian when it comes to dribbling, and they're not half bad.
No, Uruguay is definitely one of the teams that I would not want to play. Just with their repertoire of being a team that usually gets to at least the quarterfinals. That's just not a team that I want to play. I was thinking I would love a matchup with like Senegal. Senegal Same. Seems like a pretty good matchup for Canada. I do think that they are one of the weaker teams in pot two. Senegal or Iran, I think would be
Morocco's
great.
Pretty weak too.
Yeah, Morocco, those would be the three that I would say. Ecuador, so Canada just played Ecuador and drew 0-0 as well. I mean, just to like highlight this, Canada's played, so they played six friendlies and they drew five of them 0-0. So they hadn't scored, and then they won 2-0 against Venezuela like last week. So they finally broke the scoreless skid, but five straight games they played ended in 0-0 ties.
Who's watching these games?
They're just prep for the World Cup. They don't mean anything, but it is still not. It's a little concerning when you can't score in five straight games. The defense was great because they also didn't allow a goal for five straight games. But I hope that they can get back on track because they weren't playing very good competition. Again, they were playing Colombia and Ecuador, who are pot two teams. That did draw 0-0 against. So it shows that they're at least on par with those teams. But I still think Canada would probably want to avoid any of the South American teams in that pot.
The Aussies are pretty good too. They're in pot two, right?
Yeah.
We played them in October, on October. I want to, is it the 9th or 10th? Might've been the 11th in Montreal. I was lucky enough to go there actually. I don't know if we want to play the Australians either, because the thing is that all the Australian guys who play on the Australian team are dudes who are not good enough to play rugby, so they're pretty jacked. And when we played Australia, it was a pretty physical game, seeing as though we come from a country that doesn't value flopping around like a fish on the field. However, the guys on the Canadian team have never played hockey, so they're not really good at throwing the bod. And when it comes to push and shove, the Australians definitely were shoving a lot harder than we were pushing. So I think we want to avoid them too, because I'm serious, though. We actually did lose that game because Australia like physically pushed the ball into the net.
Yeah.
The Canadian goalie had the ball, and someone just kicked him in the gut, and the ball rolled in the net, and it counted.
Crazy.
So we definitely want to avoid Australia, too. And actually, to be fair, Australia is not half bad, because they got a mix of dudes from the outback who are pretty gross, and they have good sty, and the sty is like 80% of it.
Yeah.
But then they also have a couple guys that they've brought on who started playing pro in Australia after they retired from pro and other countries, and they're actually still really good. And we don't have that many. We have a lot of really good young guys, but we don't have the same veteran experience.
Yeah, Canada's definitely one of the younger teams in the tournament. That's promising for the future, but can definitely harm you when you're playing these big World Cup games. You guys want to move on to pot three? Take a look at some of the teams there. So the highlight of pot three for me is Norway. They've got Erling Haaland, who's obviously one of the best players in the world. So that is an immediate red flag for me. But taking a look at some of the other teams, there's Panama, Egypt, Algeria, Scotland, Paraguay, Tunisia, Cote d'Ivoire, Uzbekistan, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, and South Africa. So what are we thinking here, Sam?
I would love to play Cote d'Ivoire. I don't know about Cote d'Ivoire. That might be its twin.
The Ivory Coast? Should I just say the Ivory Coast?
The thing is, if we play Tunisia, Ivory Coast, or Algeria, to me, it's all kind of one and the same. Those guys are all kind of same skill level, and I don't think they're that dominant. I think Morocco of the North African countries is probably the best.
Mm-hmm.
Because, for one, there's Hakimi, but two, they're just better. I don't know why, but right now they're better. Usually Algeria is actually better than Morocco.
Yeah.
But I think here, again, we want to avoid the South American Paraguay. I don't actually think Paraguay is better than Canada. I think they're a lot worse. I just think we should avoid playing South American teams as much as we can.
That's fair enough. Because they do have the most experience against Canada. A lot of the South American, North American teams play a lot of their friendlies against each other. So it was definitely a good one to avoid. I was thinking Egypt might be a team they want to avoid as well. Just because Egypt's... Because of Egypt's pretty high level team with some pretty big name players, and I think Scotland just had a crazy clinching. I think they just qualified in some crazy way, and I don't know, that's a team that's fired up, right? So Scotland might be a team they want to avoid as well.
Yeah, but the nice thing with the Scots is that they're a mix of Gaelic football players who didn't quite pan out and a bunch of Highlanders and Lowlanders who are still fighting over some feuds. So I'm never too worried about Scotland when it comes to soccer.
Yeah.
To be frank.
Yeah. So it sounds like a lot of people in the World Cup, Sam, are former rugby players or failed rugby players.
These guys are failed Gaelic football players.
Oh, failed Gaelic football players. Yeah. Okay, my bad.
That's a tough sport.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Well, yeah, lo and behold, not that I mean to perform an aside here, but Kyle and I actually grew up around a former Gaelic football player. He's our neighbor. He's from Ireland, where the game was invented. And he never played pro, but he made it pretty far in Gaelic football. It is a complete mix of rugby and soccer. It's just a much more entertaining version of soccer in many respects, primarily because you can quite literally fight.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't make everything.
Speaking of that part of the world, I saw something interesting. So the United Kingdom put forward a motion to ban reselling of sports tickets, as a whole. And I thought that was interesting. I don't think it's gone through entirely yet, but essentially it would get rid of any form of reselling tickets. I think you could only resell them for the same amount that you bought them or less. I don't even understand why this stuff doesn't exist. It's just pure, the only people benefiting from these scams are the scammers. No one else is getting anything out of the scalping, really. So yeah. I think that's logical. I think the problem is in North America, there's just Ticketmaster is such a big company, so much lobbying power. They're going to fight tooth and nail before they let that happen, because they would essentially turn their profits to zero instantly.
Yeah, no.
Well, that's in Canada, but in the U.S., there's a lot more than just Ticketmaster. I mean, SeatGeek has a huge market share. Huge.
Mm-hmm.
No, that's true. But I think that just because there's competition in a very exploitative market doesn't mean that it's less exploitative, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, I hate ticket resales. I hate them. If I want to buy a ticket last minute, I should be able to buy it for what they bought it for.
Or less,
I don't know. I guess in a world where everyone is morally virtuous, maybe, but I don't really.
No, I'm not.
I get the idea that people were buying tickets and waiting until the prices rose like crazy so they could make a mega profit. But
to me, it's not the individuals, though. It's these companies, they literally spam the queue with thousands of bots, and then they'll buy up as many tickets as they physically can in seconds and then try to resell them. I think it's a thing of scales, right? Back in the old days when people were just buying a couple of tickets and reselling them outside the front door, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
But now it's all digital.
I'd be fine with that. If they want to keep scalpers.
Yeah, like, I don't really care about that. But we have, like, literally, like, full companies with, like, teams of people and bots just flooding, like, online servers to, like, they literally crash them or whatever, like, so you can't even get the tickets at all.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's kind of ridiculous.
That is what I hate. That's the worst. That might be the worst thing ever. Yeah. Pot 4. Right. Jordan. One sec, let me make sure I get this one right.
By the way, this is the first time Jordan's ever made the PIFA. I think it's the first time they've ever qualified.
Congratulations to Jordan. Cool. That's huge. Cabo Verde, Ghana, Curacao, Haiti, and New Zealand. And then there's one, two, three, four, five, six teams still can qualify for the World Cup. And Italy is one of those teams. So pot
that
four.
That can qualify.
Yeah, Italy can qualify still. They'd have to win a couple Euro play-in games right now.
Where are the days of Balotelli?
Yeah, it's rough for Italy, man. I mean, I was talking to my housemate about this too. I'm like, what if Canada and Italy end up in the same group? Who are all these crazy Canadian Italians gonna cheer for? Are they gonna cheer for Canada or are they gonna cheer for Italy? Because I honestly think they would cheer for Italy more than they would cheer for Canada.
And I
think that's like unique compared to like any football team. I don't think there's too many like football teams that like a lot of people would be like rallying behind instead of Canada. You know what I mean? If they are Canadian, I think it's like it's really unique. I remember when you obviously Canada wasn't in the Euros, but when Italy won the Euros, I was at like a campground and all of a sudden there were parades in the campground of all of these Italians in their golf carts waving the Italian flag behind them while they rode through the campground. I was like, what is going on here? I mean, I've never seen, like, that doesn't even happen for, like, the Stanley Cup winners. Like, say Toronto did that. I don't know.
Oh man.
Yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was crazy, but I was like, this is definitely one of the most interesting groups if Italy and Canada would be in the same group. I'm really hoping they aren't. I'm really hoping that they do not have to play Italy in the first round. If Italy makes it. I mean, we have to remember that they might choke for the third straight World Cup and not make the World Cup again.
You know, so I think out of sympathy, and not even sympathy, out of respect for the Italians, we kind of would owe it to them to cheer for them, too, if they ended up beating Canada and playing against Canada. Because last year, when the Italians didn't make the World Cup, the official Italian soccer team's Instagram put out a post asking its followers who they should support. And overwhelmingly, everyone said Canada. And they actually cheered Canada on. Like, at the Italian embassy in Canada, there were huge parades to watch the Canada games. All over Italy, people were cheering on Canada. So if Canada were to play Italy, and God forbid we lose, I feel like we would have to be very content that our brothers in soccer won.
Absolutely. I completely agree. Yeah.
But of the teams who have qualified, though, who do you guys think is the easiest to get by?
I think the hardest is going to be Ghana. I think Ghana is actually pretty underrated. I think that they are definitely better than a pot four team. And then I'd be fine with all the other ones that have qualified so far. New Zealand, maybe.
I'd be worried about it.
But, yeah.
I'd be worried about Haiti.
Yeah?
Fair enough. Think of how many good soccer players we have from Haiti on our team.
I actually don't know how many good soccer players we have from Haiti on Canada's team.
There's two from Canada, from the Canadian team. I guess my point is that Haiti's actually really good at soccer. Usually they don't always have a team for other reasons other than sport. But Haiti's going to be good. They play a lot of soccer. They're usually slept on quite a bit, and honestly, I get why. Mm-hmm. It's because they don't really make too many international appearances, but when they do, they usually pack a pretty big punch. But I'm actually more impressed than anything that they're able to have a team right now. For those of you who don't know, Haiti doesn't really have, well, Italy sometimes too, but Haiti at the moment doesn't really have a government. And so I actually don't even know how they're able to exist and operate as a FIFA team, but it is definitely impressive.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to see them in the tournament. I think this is also such a unique tournament because this is the biggest tournament this is the biggest FIFA World Cup ever. 48 teams. So this is like different from the past where it was only 32. So 48 teams, that's going to mean a bigger knockout stage and more soccer to watch. So I think it's going to be a really good World Cup. And that draw, just a reminder, is December 5th. And then the tournament is this summer in Toronto. You guys buying tickets? So are you making the trek down to Toronto for a FIFA World Cup match?
Virtually, maybe.
Virtually? I think yeah. I'm going to join you on the virtual.
That's outside of my price range.
Well, I'll say this, you know, if there were still only 32 teams going, I would go. But I actually think we're just giving out too many freebies and handouts to people. I don't know if we should be letting 48 countries qualify now. I know that we keep expanding the list of countries in the world. But I don't think it's a good idea to make it so participative. I think we're taking away from its competitive spirit. And actually, to be fair, I don't think we should have 48 teams. It's just too many. There should just be 32 teams or less. There should be 16 teams and really make it be the best of the best that qualify. But hey, if I could afford to go, I would go.
Yeah.
But, regrettably.
I think the issue with 16 or, I mean, I'm kind of with you, Sam. I don't think there's really a necessary reason to move to 48. I think what they wanted was more inclusion from the world. So instead of having just like the best of the best, you want to
Europe,
like,
and Brazil and Argentina.
Yes, exactly. Instead of having those teams being the only ones that have a chance to do anything with it, I think it was a good idea for them to kind of expand. I mean, because like you look at Jordan, who's making the tournament for the first time. That's pretty big for them as a football team, as a country. Like that is football association is going to get a ton of funding now for making the World Cup. Like that is a huge thing. If they really want to grow the game even more than it already is, because it's already the most popular sport in the world. This is a good way of doing it because, I mean, the World Cup's the most watched sporting event in the world. It's definitely got a lot of good press for some of these countries. But, yeah, no, I definitely understand what you mean and I kind of agree with you, but I see the reasoning behind why they made this change.
By the way, not that I mean to intrude, but are you sure that it's the biggest, most watched sporting event in the world? I'm pretty sure it's Tour de France.
No.
I don't think it's the Tour de France.
Okay. I think it's also calculated. I think there's different ways of calculating it, but I think World Cup like gross is the most views total by far.
Oh, probably.
Yeah.
Mostly because of the size of number of games plus number of countries involved. Like it's just kind of hard to compete with that.
Yeah, you're kind of touching a lot of markets. Yeah. All right. Anyways, we'll move on to the last couple of minutes of the show. We're going to talk a little bit about the NHL. Not too much big stories out of the NHL this week. A few players hit waivers and a few players were released. I feel like it's kind of the first wave of that. Notably, Gogoriev, the Sabres, decided that they were done with him. Now, he was a goalie that I thought he was pretty good when he was on the Rangers the last couple of years, and I honestly thought the Sabres might use him, but he did not work out, so he enters free agency. Some other ones are Milan Lucic, which I honestly did not know that he was in the AHL until last week, until I saw like some highlights of him. The way he was skating was getting made fun of on Twitter because he has such a hunchback.
He always was like that, though. He always skated like that.
He always skated like that. But I was like, who is that? Like, and then I'm like, oh, that's Milan Lucic on, I think, the Springfield Thunderbirds, St. Louis's AHL team. But he's done. He got cut from that. So,
damn.
Is there an NHL future for Milan Lucic? I don't know. I don't know at this point.
All roads lead to beer league eventually, and I think his journey has ended. You missed an important announcement for the Buffalo Sabres. They now instated beer Sabres at the stadium.
Oh.
I don't know if you've seen a photo of them, but they're really funny looking.
I think I saw the one guy dump it all over them.
Yeah, it's like a literal, like a plastic sword full of beer.
That's awesome.
Ever since they've instated the plastic beer Sabres, they have overtaken the Leafs. So the Leafs have officially moved into the basement. They're making themselves pretty cozy down there, and looks like it might be long term.
I was on TSN today, and I saw the fight for McKenna, and it was a Leafs logo beside Gavin McKenna. I'm like, oh my gosh, Leafs fans freaking out, being last place in the NHL or in the Eastern Conference, and they're already talking about Gavin McKenna coming to Toronto. Crazy stuff.
There's always an angle.
Yeah, but it is cool to see Toronto in the bottom of the division, if I'm being honest. But it is still tight. Like, they really aren't down there. Like, they're going to be stuck down there. They're down there by, like, a point. So
they just haven't looked great. I mean, okay, the team, like Sam and I were talking about this the other day, I don't know what is going on in Nashville, but holy mac, they got to change out the water filter or something in that locker room. It's either full of lead. I don't know if someone's putting lead in their boots. I don't know what's going on. Like, they need to get new gear, new everything. Like, get a new personal trainer. Like, something's seriously wrong there. Stamkos, like, the guy's on pace for 20 points.
That's 20 crazy. Points
with bad peripherals and bad defensive numbers. I was saying, like, that's like fourth line, you know, numbers there. Like, you're not even playing in the top six with that kind of production. And not to mention, like, no good defensive statistics either. Like, I can't believe it.
Yeah, it's. I think with the NHL should just impose a rule that says once you become a superstar like Stammer and you have two bad seasons in a row, that you are forced into retirement and should be called the Preserving Legacy Act. And in fact, I actually think the United States and Canada should jointly agree to this. And perhaps we can even put it into the UN. Like, say a guy like Stammer wants to go play in the Dutch Elite Hockey League, the German league there. Like, they should just automatically have to say no. There should be a universal convention. Because I'm serious. My little cousin and his friends think that Stammer is poo at hockey. That guy was disgusting. He reeked of filth. And now they think the guy's poo. They don't think he reeks. They think he's poo. It's unacceptable. Stammer should be canonized in the eyes of all humans beyond. And it should matter not their race, color, age, intelligence, coming to be, or anything like that. All that should matter is the fact that he's canonized and presented as the holy gospel of goal scoring in the Canadian entity. But if we allow him to keep playing, we're just going to remember him as we remember, I don't know, like, who's someone who's not good at hockey who played in the NHL.
Milan
so much so that we won't
Lucic.
Remember his name. We're going to be like, who? Well, no, we're not. No, we're going to remember Milan Lucic because he made the news for something funny 2 years ago, but or not funny, something bad. But,
They got some serious problems down there, and it looks like their race for Gavin McKenna might be solidified over there.
Yeah, well, I think Nashville might have won that one already. Although I will say, Toronto being at the bottom of the league feels awfully familiar. I'm not sure if you guys remember those glorious days and years when we were children, when everything was calm and peaceful and assured, when Montreal was terrible too and Ottawa kept making the playoffs. I believe those were called the golden years. I think so much so that Elgin Street in Ottawa was called the Street of Gold because the Senators kept making the playoffs and pushing in so far so consistently when Daniel Alfredson, Jason Spezza, and Danny Heatley were on the same line, backed up by Mike Fisher and a few other people whose names I can't remember anymore. Like, wow. And Chris Neal, one of the greatest players in the NHL, beating the crap out of everyone he fought against.
Yeah. Oh. Speaking of the Senators, Brady Tkachuk's supposed to make a return shortly. So that's big. I mean, he's been – like, I feel like he's been pretty spotty the last couple of years with injuries and absences. Hopefully he maintains it. It would really suck if he got injured or re-injured in the Olympics again. Yep. Possible. I feel like there's going to be some like devastating injuries that come out of the Olympics. This is why the NHL didn't want people to play in it before, but I think it's worth it. But if you're making a playoff push, maybe sweating a little bit if your star player goes down.
Yeah, I know what you mean, because that like we mentioned before, that's a long tournament, so like they got to play a decent amount of games. It's not just the Four Nations face off, which is a lot shorter, right? So I mean, it's a situation where he scratched the first few group stage games, or he doesn't play the first few group stage games that don't matter as much, and comes in and plays in the knockout round. But
what was the other thing I was actually supposed to say is the U.S. Olympic roster is looking a little like a hospital room there. They got some problems. Hellebuck out 6 weeks. Matthews out with a self injury. Like, they got a bunch of players. Brady's kind of on the margins. Both Tkachuk's still recovering.
Jack Hughes got
his
finger off
a little bit. Yeah, he's got. Don't let him have any team dinners.
Yeah, no team dinners for Jack Hughes.
I don't even know. I still understand what happened there, but yeah, not great. So their team is looking pretty banged and beaten up there.
Yeah, no,
I think the big one's Hellebuck though. That's huge. That's huge. That's major for them.
Who do they go to in net? Ottinger.
Yeah, Ottinger's pretty good, though.
Yeah,
I mean, that's
pretty good backup goalie. Yeah.
I think he's still better than Canada's options.
Yeah, yeah, no.
I don't know. I don't know. Some of the Canadian goalies are doing okay right now. But
yeah. I keep saying this. You know, there's one great Canadian goalie who's going to become available pretty soon. I think he's eligible for the Olympics. I just don't know if we'll take him, but I think he would be our best goaltender.
Sam Montembeau?
No, not him.
Oh, no. Okay. All right. Well,
the former Philadelphia Flyer goaltender.
Well, we're getting close to the end of the show here. I want to thank all of the listeners. It's not easy for Sam to come all energized all the time. He's a very busy law school student right now. And he's looking at me with these crazy eyes right now. I'm really happy that you guys are able to come on to the podcast. Just wasting these last few seconds before Sam says something out of pocket
okay.
Again.
We're gonna have to end this here before we gotta cut too much out.
But that's everything we have today. We'll see you next week on Plugged in My Ears.
Support Kingston Literacy and Skills programs and enjoy a festive night at the theater. Join us for the 4th annual KLNS Theater Night on Wednesday, December 10th.